Hello, and welcome to another episode of Latino in Chicago. This is your host, Eric Lugo. Before we jump into today's episode, I'd like to take a quick moment and say thank you. We are 3 episodes into Latino in Chicago, and already I've received an incredible amount of positive feedback about what we're trying to achieve. Not only has the idea of a podcast featuring innovative Latina and Latino minds from across the city been welcomed, but it has also reached more people than I could have imagined. Our subscriber count continues to grow, and that is all thanks to you. Because of that, I do have a favor to ask. We want to continue to spread the word about Latino in Chicago, and one way to do that is to subscribe in iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you're enjoying the content, please leave us a 5-star review. All right, on to today's show. Our guest is Jose Rico, Senior Vice President of Community Impact at the United Way of Metropolitan Chicago. Jose leads the organization's community impact work in education, income, health, and basic needs support. He also stewards its neighborhood network model of delivering highly coordinated and concentrated services in underserved communities. Prior to the United Way, Jose served as the Executive Director of the White House Initiative on Educational Excellence for Hispanics, where he planned policy, strategic initiatives, outreach, and communications for President Obama's education agenda in the Latino community. Jose offers some great insight on the challenges facing Chicago and ways Latino leaders can continue to be a part of the solutions process. He also offered some great advice for young professionals aspiring to grow in philanthropy and their field. I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and without further ado, here's Jose. So, Jose, welcome to Latino in Chicago. It's great to have you here.
Great. It's great to be here, Eric. Yeah.
So, can you tell us a little bit about the United Way and your role here?
Sure. So, I'm the Senior Vice President for Community Impact here at United Way. And that basically means is that I lead the foundation part of the organization. So, many people know United Way as a community chess model where people who work in workplaces give their donations from their paycheck or they write a check to the United Way that for many years here in Chicago, almost 100 years, collected different dollar amounts, whether it was $1 a month or large corporate gifts, and put it all together in a big pot. And then the organization, what we do here right now is we provide grants to about 200 community human service organizations to do the good work that they do, right? Mm-hmm. And many of these organizations like Instituto Latino Progreso, La Casa Norte, Metropolitan Family Services, Gads Hill, are the great human service organizations that are here improving our communities in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of areas does the United Way then giving to?
So traditionally, United Way would give almost to any area, any nonprofit that was meeting the needs of people in crisis. Most recently, in the last 6 years, United Ways across the country have reorganized to look at what are called impact outcomes, mm-hmm. meaning that if you give a gift to United Way, we're going to be able to show the return of that donation based on 4 areas of impact outcomes. And they are safety net, food pantries, homeless shelters, education, which here in Chicago is early learning and middle school, so middle school programs, and we fund early learning centers. Income, which is job placements. We provide grants to organizations that place people in jobs. And the one that we've had the biggest success actually is in health.
Okay.
So we fund both community-based health organizations that provide people access to health services regardless of immigration status. But the big piece that we started about 3 years ago with the passage of the Affordable Care Act is we actually have hired over the past 3 years almost 200 navigators to help enroll people in health insurance and be able to help them access the whole health insurance landscape. So those are the four areas that we've been doing most of our investments over the last 6 years.
That's great. On the health front, are you seeing families accessing healthcare, preventative healthcare, as well as emergency care different now?
Yeah. So, you know, what we've seen is obviously the goal of ACA was to increase health insurance, and we knew that a lot of families that were eligible to get Medicaid or Medicare services were now able to access those services simply because there was a neighborhood center or a neighbor who was trained to and show them how to enroll into the Affordable Care Act. Mm-hmm. So just the act of training neighborhood people to be able to access their neighbors and show them how easy it was and how affordable it was. For many folks, it's free, to then not only get health insurance, but in Medicaid and Medicare, you have to re-enroll once or twice a year. And there's a navigator that helps them do that. Mm-hmm. We've also been able to get young people and immigrants who are eligible go into the marketplace. So this is the insurance that you will pay. And again, we've heard stories from many people that this is the first time they've been able to afford health insurance. And for some of them, it's been life-saving. Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of great work there. There's still a lot more work to do. For example, you know, here in Chicago in particular, the need for mental health services has just increased dramatically. And we need to make sure that the service providers that provide that service also get paid at the same rates mm-hmm. that physical health providers have. And that's something that's something that goes into legislation. But from the foundation part, from the work that I lead, we're actually providing more grants to providers for mental health services because we know that's a huge need. And being able to be in the community and knowing what's going on in the areas of jobs, knowing what's going on in education, knowing what's going on in health, allows us to then adjust our areas of giving mm-hmm. that tries to address some of those needs.
That's great. So how did you make your way to the United Way?
So when I returned to Chicago from D.C., one thing I knew that I wanted to be able to make an impact, but I knew the limits of government. Mm. So it was clear to me that I did not want to come work in government because I was there for about 5 years. And then, you know, as a high school principal being part of government, I saw the limits of it. And I wanted to be in an organization that allowed me to innovate and to mm-hmm. be able to make impact, not at a broad scale because I came from a place that was national, mm-hmm. but really in a place that was broad enough to be able to influence something. Mm-hmm. And when I was in D.C., what I heard, what I saw, many of the innovations in, for example, My Brother's Keeper, many mm-hmm. of the innovations with the Promise Neighborhoods, mm-hmm. many of the innovations in community development were led by foundations and some of them from United Ways mm-hmm. from across the country. And then I saw that if you're able to be in a place where you could leverage private dollars, where you could be at the table with governments, and then you could always keep your feet on the ground in communities, that's where actually you had the opportunity to make some change.
Awesome.
So for me, that was really a place that I wanted to be. I understood kind of the way policy and government worked. And a lot of the times getting pressure from the outside, both in resources and influence and policy, mm-hmm. Really move internal government policy better than if I would have been in government. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to take a break from the government side, yeah. and this was just a great place to be able to make some of those changes.
That's great. Mm-hmm. And can you tell us just a little bit about your time in D.C.? Like, where did you come from?
Sure. So after the president won the election in 2009, I was asked to join the president's team on the education side. So I actually went to meet with, at that time, President-elect Obama over at the Dirksen Federal Building on December 12th, 2009. And I remember it was December 12th because my mom reminded me it was El Día de la Virgen de Guadalupe. Mm. And when I went to meet with him, you know, he basically welcomed me to the family. He was like, we want to get people in D.C., We want to get families that we like in D.C., and we want you and your family to come. Yeah. And the other thing he told me is we also want people that know how it is to address these complex issues who have experience on the ground with this. So he wanted me because I was a high school principal and wanted me to work over at the Department of Education to be able to address some of these issues that had some experience. And at that time, I remember when he told me that, I thought, well, of course, that makes total sense. Mm-hmm. When I went to D.C., I realized that I was an outlier. Mm-hmm. That, you know, the first interaction I had with a lot of the Department of Education senior staff, not the political appointments. These are the people that actually run most of the programs there. They all were shocked that I was an actual high school principal and had education in my background, because in the previous administration, in the Bush administration, there was hardly any people in that were doing education policy that had that background. Mm-hmm. And then within the political appointees, those of us that were there that came to work with the president, some of the folks that Arnie brought in, not a lot also mm-hmm. had that educational experience that was recent. You know, mm-hmm. some folks had experience from a while back, but there were a few people, there were only a handful of us that had experience in the schools. So that was really interesting. That was mm-hmm. interesting being there and looking at these incredible programs and a lot of the reforms that were put out there. And me having that experience on the ground, I understood now what the president meant mm-hmm. when he said we really want people that have some contact knowledge and experience here. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the discussions and arguments and decisions really, I think, were better because of some of the folks that had that experience on the ground.
Awesome. So from Chicago neighborhood to D.C., back to Chicago, mm-hmm. thinking about neighborhoods, mm-hmm. but not necessarily in a direct neighborhood role. Mm-hmm. However, you're looking to support neighborhoods and their challenges on a regular basis. Right. Can we speak a little bit to some of the challenges that you see Chicago facing?
Yeah, well, you know, I think, you know, right now, anybody who watches presidential debates or reads almost any article about what's happening to our urban centers in the country will see that Chicago right now is basically the talking points of mm-hmm. a lot of the problems that's happening in major cities, right? We're the outlier in terms of how bad things are. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the most recent statistic I saw that Chicago accounts for nearly half of all the murders in urban America today, wow. right? And so right now, almost everywhere you go, that's what's happening. And, you know, and for those of us that have been doing this work, we have seen some pretty incredible markers that kind of show us, what's happening in our cities. And in light of what the mayor's announcements last week, mm-hmm. You know, I think we need to be able to recognize that, you know, that the violence in Chicago is obviously something that's affected our neighborhoods for far too long. I was telling somebody the other day that, you know, when I grew up in Pilsen and Little Village, there was a lot of violence that was happening. I mean, I witnessed several violent acts myself, and it was something that we lived with. But now, when you look at the scale of the violence and who's perpetrating that violence, and how random it is, I think this is something really, really new, and it's alarming. Mm-hmm. And if you look over the statistics over the last 3 or 4 years, there was actually a time when some of that violence was starting to decrease. Mm-hmm. But and then you overlay the year when the school closings happened, and then you overlay last year when the state budget passed and a lot of critical job placement and teen programs were closed or shut down. And then you overlay the lack of jobs mm-hmm. in our neighborhoods and the influx of guns. I mean, this is basically a perfect storm of all the negative things that that could predict that this is the crisis that we're in. And I think, you know, the way I look at this, the way I kind of try to wrap my head around this, is that I see if if you have somebody who could provide jobs, if you have somebody who's a school leader, if you have a social service provider, a youth, if you have all of us in a room and we talk about how to solve the gun violence issue in our neighborhoods, you're going to get a lot of solutions. Mm-hmm. And I think you're also not going to get everybody to agree on the problems, right? And for me, the way I think about this is that I think all of that is fine. I don't think we need to agree on what the solutions are per se, but I think we all need to understand from our point of view what the problems are, right? Because I think that's the only way, once we map out what all the different ways in which we define our problems from my point of view, then we're going to be able to define and map out what are the gaps, what are we not addressing, and then we're going to be able to map out how can we work together on this, and then we're going to be able to map out what's the role of the city, what's the role of the state, what's the role of the feds, what's the role of the black clubs, what's the role of the church faith leader. And to me, that's what I'm hoping that we're able to get together on and figure out how to do that. Because I you know, the thing that I thought was missing from the mayor's speech was that that there isn't one solution. And I think the superintendent said 2 weeks ago that this problem here is not going to be solved by the police. This is not a policing problem.
Yeah.
This is more of a problem of how our community, our city, and our state has chosen to disinvest in our neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And this is what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I very much agree with that. I'm curious, how do you think philanthropy is in a unique position to respond to some of the, or bring, you know, these types of conversations, moments together?
Yeah, so, you know, I think that, you know, in we're in a very interesting place where right now philanthropy is trying to figure that out, right? I know that I get calls from my board of directors with urgent calls and urgent pleas for us to really address this issue of violence in in our role, in the role that we play. And you know, and we have a strategy of investing more dollars in neighborhoods, of convening local players to agree on the issues that they want to work on, and to resource and provide capacity building resources in terms of money, people, expertise, and data support to help them do that. But we also know that right now within the foundation world, we're not as organized and as aligned as we could be. And we're not having those conversations that I think we need to have around, from each one of our perspectives, the causes of these problems, and how can we start to map out not only what we think the problems are, but how our investments are trying to address these problems. And unfortunately, I think we are all, including ourselves, are putting in some good intentions and some resources into neighborhoods to try to address some of these issues. But I think we could do better in really coming together and trying to map out what are some of the real root causes of this, and how can me as a funder, along with other funders and other community leaders, how can we get involved in a comprehensive plan that we know will address some of these root causes and will really tackle some of these issues. So there's great work that MacArthur is doing around gun violence prevention and police accountability. There's great work that the Trust is doing in these community labs around how do you actually help community members do this, identify these problems, come up with strategies. There's great work that LISC is doing. There's a bunch of foundations and intermediaries that are doing incredible work in these different places. but it's just not coalesced.
Yeah.
And it's not something that's that anybody, even any community leader, could point to and connect the dots to see how all of this is all leading towards a solution for neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. What role do you see Latino communities playing in those solutions?
So you know, I've in the short time that I've been back, I've been really impressed and re-energized by the Latino leaders here in Chicago. You know, I came from a place where I saw some of the smartest, most humble, most hardworking people trying to drive solutions and run the federal government, you know, in an incredible way, and was really impressed by the talent and the dedication of people there. And I've seen that here in Chicago from the Latino leaders here in Chicago. I think the first thing that I noticed was the lack of acceptance or the lack of credibility that Latino leaders have been given by policymakers, both in the city and the state, even though we have probably one of the highest level of been working in neighborhoods and communities in the nonprofit world for a very long time, have proven results, have leaders of great character and integrity, and we're not invited to the table to be able to make those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So I think first and foremost, I think that there isn't that level of knowledge and understanding that the role that Latinos have played in building this city to where it's at.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know how if it wasn't for Latinos, our population in Chicago would have dropped. We would have probably been behind San Antonio or
mm-hmm.
any of these small cities.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for our population. And then also, if you look at the education numbers that right now are increasing, those education numbers, the majority of that is because of Latino achievement
mm-hmm.
in education has increased dramatically over the last 10 years. So even though we play an incredible productive role in the city, we're still not at the table and not being considered for making those policy decisions and driving some policy here in the city. I think that's going to change soon. But, you know, we're already the plurality.
Yeah.
We're already some of the brightest and some of the best leaders here in the city. And I think that we just need to do a better job of aligning ourselves with other incredible leaders
mm-hmm.
and be able to put forward some of the policy recommendations that are not only going to benefit Latinos, but are going to benefit everybody in the city of Chicago.
Yeah, that's great. That point seems really important to me, right? Especially given the role you have
mm-hmm.
right here at the United Way. You're an individual with a perspective and a background in Latino issues,
mm-hmm.
but you have in some ways a higher calling, you know, through this role at least, right, in terms of thinking about communities mm-hmm. expansively. How do you balance those two things, right? One, kind of bringing your authentic self to work,
mm-hmm.
and then at the same time, recognizing that that authentic self can influence and support other communities.
Yeah. So when I come into work, I'm always thinking about how can we make neighborhoods stronger,
mm-hmm.
right? Who are the leaders and who are the organizations and what are the initiatives and projects that are happening in Roseland and Auburn Gresham, right, in Bronzeville, in Belmont Cragen, and these neighborhoods that could really provide, not only meet the needs of individuals, but could really help households prosper,
mm-hmm.
right? And for me, I really want to meet and talk with and learn what these neighborhoods and leaders are doing. That's why I come to work and why I get excited about the work that I do here
mm-hmm.
At United Way. The second part is that, and then once you start digging deeper, you start understanding what are the unique attributes of some of that work,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you start looking at why, a program in Pilsen or Little Village is being successful, whether it's a health promoters program or whether it's a housing program. There is some cultural uniqueness to that program because of where it's placed, right? Because who's driving that program and because of the population that you're trying to reach. What I really get kind of really excited about is when you see a program in another community, again, whether it's in Auburn Gresham or whether it's in Brownsville, that is uniquely positioned in the African-American community, and to see whether that would actually cross over into the Latino community, or what can we learn from that to be able to strengthen mm-hmm. another neighborhood. That, to me, is actually where I get really excited, because I believe personally and professionally that the only way we're going to bring things to scale and get them out of our organizations or of our neighborhoods is if we're able to really build this idea of solidarity amongst communities that will allow one leader to go to another leader and say, you know, I believe in your success so much, right, that I want to be able to work with you, mentor you, and help you implement this, or learn how you're going to implement this idea, mm-hmm. because that's the only way my program or my project is going to be sustainable. Mm-hmm. And I think at one level, you know, I believe that if we're going to have any of the work in our neighborhoods improve and be sustainable, it cannot just be based in a Latino neighborhood mm-hmm. or an African-American community. Neighborhood or mm-hmm. or an immigrant neighborhood or an LGBTQ neighborhood community, mm-hmm. they really need to be able to feel some kind of alliance or solidarity in order for that to be sustainable. Mm-hmm. And so for me, that's the part that I'm in a unique situation to see those things because I'm able to go to different neighborhoods and get a sense of what's happening in those places, and then also be able to see some of the connections, but also saying, oh, wow, if what's happening there could have happened here, that might actually improve that program. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's the part that's the most exciting, I think, mm-hmm. Of the role that I play here in this organization.
What advice would you give to younger folks that might want to take on or step into a similar role as yours?
Well, I think that the first piece of advice is that first you have to work really hard to know the job that you currently have, mm-hmm. right? You have to be able to understand what excellence is, and execution, and reflection and feedback is, mm-hmm. for you to be able to know and teach and provide technical assistance to others in your field, mm-hmm. right? So I think sometimes, you know, and that takes time, mm-hmm. right? That doesn't happen in 6 months or 1 year. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I've done education and did learning and understanding for almost a little bit over 15 years, and I'm still learning about some new things that are going on, and I still know something about mm-hmm. teaching and learning communities mm-hmm. and student development. But I at least know enough that I could really share my knowledge and understanding with somebody that wants to get into the field. But it yeah. takes time, and yeah. it takes working at your craft for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. So first and foremost, know your craft, mm-hmm. right? And then to me, the second part that I think is really important, and what I, you know, share with my son and with other people, is then you have to really understand what your passion is. And what you want to be able to accomplish. And it cannot be around a title or a position or even an organization or a place, but it's what is the passion that you have, you know? And so if your passion is ensuring that people feel at home in their neighborhoods where they live, and then you're going to find something, you're going to have a role where you're going to be able to help make that possible for families and children in whatever way, whether it's a school teacher, whether it's community development organization, whether it's the corner store building, you know, you own the corner store. But if you find your passion, the job and the position then will figure itself out. But you really then need to understand your passion. So two things, right? Do what you're doing now. If this is something that you love doing, do it well and know what you're doing. And then once you find your passion of what you want to do in life and how you want to be able, you'll figure out how you're going to get there. And that's going to work itself out. I've had many people ask me, what was your 10-year career trajectory? I was like, I didn't even have a 10-month career trajectory. I don't know what my 10-year career, but I know what I'm passionate about. And I know that in the job that I'm, every job that I'm currently in, I always try to be excellent in that position, so I could take that with me wherever I go.
That's great, Jose. Any parting thoughts?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that one thing I would like to just put out there is that if anybody who's listening who wants to be able to figure out how to find their passion or how to actually get good at their current position to find what their next step is, I'm more than happy to have a cup of coffee with you. You could shoot me a message on my LinkedIn page. And then if it's just correspondence, just for any advice, or even have a cup of coffee, I would love to be able to do that.
Awesome. Why don't we just leave it there?
That sounds good.
Thanks a lot for the time, Jose.
No problem, Eric. I really appreciate
it. It was a great conversation.
Right.
All right, folks. That was Jose Rico, Senior Vice President of Community Impact at the United Way of Metro Chicago. Again, I hope you enjoyed, and if so, please visit iTunes and subscribe, or make sure to leave us a 5-star review. This will go a long way in helping us connect to other listeners. Until next week, peace.